Hello everyone, I'm Brian Zimmerman, Custom Content Editor with Becker's Healthcare. Thank you for tuning into the Becker's Healthcare podcast series. Today, I'm pleased to be joined by our guest as we discuss usability and reducing clinician burden since the release of the 2015 ONC requirements. We are thrilled to be joined by a fantastic leader from OnScript who will dive into our discussion today. Before we begin, I want to go ahead and introduce him. Ross Teague, the Director of User Experience for OnScript. Ross, thank you for taking the time today.
Thanks so much for having me. I look forward to the discussion.
Absolutely. Let's go ahead and dive in. So the first question I have here is, when you talk about the importance of measurement, what are you measuring and how is that valuable?
Well, one of the common ways to measure usability has been through counting clicks. And you hear stories of doctors making 4,000 clicks in a shift or 50 clicks to order a medication without even studying that. You know, you just know that's too many. But I'd suggest that one reason that clinician burden has actually continued to increase is a result of using clicks as the sort of the one and only key measure of usability, because you can focus on reducing clicks without actually improving usability. It can actually increase burden. What we want to do is we want to reduce clicks, but you have to think about measuring usability more broadly. And so we like to measure based on objective measures as well as subjective measures. So you can think of objective measures as time on task and errors and accuracy and things like that. Subjective measures being ease and confidence and trust and usability. So there's some standard scales to get at that, but I think what we have to think about is we have to think about usability as a broad topic that has both objective and subjective measures, but also we have to think about it from the perspective of, let's measure it so that we know that we're tracking on doing the things that we want to do.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. Sort of the count of clicks only is just such a surface level assessment, right? And those subjective measures really get down to a more sort of granular, sophisticated measure.
Yeah, well, we've certainly seen that if you only focus on the measure of reducing clicks, you will make design decisions and development decisions that don't necessarily help the overall usability. And that's because there are different types of burden that a user deals with. One type of burden is a physical burden, right? So a click, that's a physical burden. And you want to reduce that if you can. But the problem is many times in reducing a physical burden, sometimes unknowingly, you actually shift it to being a cognitive burden. And those cognitive burdens can impact the user just as much, create decision-making problems, create more frustrations, create more burden. And so you really have to understand the different levels on different types of burden that are there, and there are multiple ways of measuring that. So we like to take a big picture of measurement. And the other reason that we like to think about measuring is because we are able to define what our success goals are going to be. We have a concept called measurable usability goals that we use, where early in a project we define how we're going to judge usability success. So not just performance or security, those are very important things to measure as you're building a product, but in terms of success for the experience that the user is going to face. Does it seem more intuitive? Is it faster? Do they trust the results more? Is it easier? Those are very subjective, but also objective. Can they do things more quickly? Are they more accurate in their decision making? So we have to think about it in a very broad way. But I think that's one of the things that has really happened over the last 5 years is more of an emphasis on measuring usability and not just making it an ideal, if you will, but actually measuring and tracking to see how you are now and what your goals are, but then also how you can improve.
And so I'm curious, what's been the most challenging part of shifting to a more user-centered approach?
So we all want to make huge changes. And I think one of the challenges is that the awareness that even small improvements in usability can have an important impact. The Mayo Clinic recently put out a study during the spring of this year that showed that a 1-point increase in a frequently used subjective usability measure, but just even a 1-point increase in that score was related to a 3% reduction in the likelihood of burnout. And so if you think about that, we're just, you know, just improving the usability by just 1 point on a scale can have a real impact on burnout. So I think that's one of the areas is to not try to say we got to fix everything all at once, but just like these small improvements, they add up. And so we can really do something there. Another challenge for us, has been just providing the design and user experience research across an organization that is so hungry for the help and the guidance and following a good user-centered design practices. People were made more aware of them, and people are looking for those. And so we've had to define specific standards and patterns that are based on good design and science that have been validated with users and clinicians. And so we've made those available to folks. And then something I'm really proud about that's really been challenging, but it's been very rewarding, is we've trained almost 900 people inside the company over the last couple of years on user-centered design processes. Now, we haven't turned them all into user-centered design and UX experts, but they are more aware of what needs to happen. They're able to include more of the methods and the tools in their design process and their processes for development. And we've started seeing a lot of benefits across the company from doing this.
Appreciate you walking us through those challenges there. And then the next question I have for you is, so what role do the clients play? How are they involved in this effort?
Well, that's actually probably the best part of this, is that in a valid, rigorous user-centered design process, there are a number of methods that you follow. And several of those are all about involving your clients early, so understanding what their needs are, what their goals are, but then also doing something called formative testing. And we've found through our own research that formative testing is the number one way that we're able to find potential patient safety issues and address usability problems. And what it really means is that you're involving your clients by having them evaluate very early designs in your product. So it's very task-based. So it's not just don't think of it as like a focus group where you might say, show someone a screen and say, what do you think of this? Let me tell you everything that's up there. Like, what do you think of what I just told you? You show somebody something, maybe it's a paper prototype or it's an interactive clickable prototype, but you sit down with them, you say, all right, order a medication. Show me how you would do that using this. It's very task-based. And as I said, it can be very early. We want it to be very early in the process, because we can make changes then before a lot of time and effort and energy has been spent on building something. Because once something gets built, it's frankly, it's just much harder to go back and change it. So it gives a very practical way for our clients to be engaged and provide input that feeds directly into the product. So it's not just someone saying, I need a product to do this. That's fine. It's very much more participatory. And so our clients are heavily involved in this part of the process. Another way that they're involved is that we spend a lot of time going out and understanding from them what their challenges are. You know, that's very early in the process, but it's very, we want to make sure we understand what they're up to, why they're doing what they do, what gets in their way, and how the technology can support that.
Excellent. Yeah, I imagine those sort of task-based assessments just, make folks feel like they really got a stake in this.
Well, I've told people before, and I tell our clients this quite frequently, as I say, if anybody brings to you a new idea for a product, whether it's Allscripts or somebody else brings to you a new idea for a product, and they walk you through how that works and what it and how you would use it, tell them like, no, hold on, let me figure out how I use it. Let me do that. And they really do have a great stake in what's going on. And I tell people this all the time, our clients don't see this as a burden, right? Sometimes they may say, well, it's tough getting clients to give feedback and they it's just tough getting on their schedule. Well, that's many times because you're coming in and they don't feel like their time is being valuably used. And so, but this is one where people do, they will spend more time. They will, they'll ask frequently at the end of these sessions, well, when can I do this again? And we're able to kind of come back to them and show them. One of the things I like about involving clients like this is because it's participatory in nature is I can sit down and say to them, here's a problem we're trying to solve. You see, we've done this, but when we do it that way, it makes this happen. And when we do it this way, it's another way. What are your thoughts? And they all of a sudden kind of go, yeah, I see the challenge. I see the problem. I see what you're trying to do. And then we're able to use them and their contextual knowledge to work together to solve that. So I think there's value in for them seeing that their time is being used well, but it's really valuable for us. And it's really one of the foundational pieces of a user-centered design process is making sure that they're involved in the process early, and it gives us a chance to do it often. The other thing about formative usability testing is it allows us to do measurement of the usability. And so we're able to, when we define those goals early on for the experience and usability, this allows us to actually go back and find out, are we on track to meeting those goals? You know, these repeated touch points with our clients gives us a chance to know if we're meeting those goals. So it's lots of value in doing this type of effort.
And so then when you talk about focusing on end-to-end usability and evaluating post-implementation usability, how are you going about that? How are you doing that?
So that's one of the important things I think sometimes gets overlooked, is that end-to-end really means that you consider all aspects of the use of a product. So it includes who's setting it up, who's maintaining it, the primary users, of course, but also who's pulling reports out of it, who's looking at the data. You have to think about all those people, all those players that are part of this activity that's going on. The other important thing, I think, when we think about end-to-end and we talked about the implementation, studies across the industry and our own experience has shown that the same EHR or HIT in a different organization can have a very different usability based on how it's been implemented or how it's been customized. And so one of the things that we've done over the last 5 years is we've increased the number of evaluations that we do of our products once they've been implemented. Because it's great to do, as I described before, involving our clients and testing out mock-ups and designs and prototypes and things that we're building. And we learn so much from that. But as I said, once it gets out into that organization, and the way that their system is set up and the way that things get implemented and applied, it can be very different. And so we spend a lot of time collecting objective and subjective measures of usability when it's in the field. And so our user experience professionals work real closely with our implementation, our services team, to help do those assessments and look for ways of improving the usability, look for ways of guiding them through their way that they're setting up workflows or whatever it is that they're doing. And so related to this is also, I mentioned the concept of customization, right? So once the product is out there, people want to customize it and make it their own and so forth. And so we spend a lot of time also discussing best choices for customization with our clients, kind of what are the areas to customize or what areas to be careful about. We also provide guidelines for proper customization. So there are, what we're trying to avoid is people making decisions that seem right at the moment to customize it for themselves, but may actually be creating a burden for them. We think about this also in the aspect of design is, where should we limit customization? Where should we not allow someone, for example, to choose a font color that they might like, but it's going to appear on a background that's going to make the contrast very difficult for them to read. So it's going to create a sensory and a cognitive burden for them. Maybe not even with them realizing it because they chose it themselves, but now it's creating burden. So we spend a lot of time also thinking about how people can make the systems the most optimized for themselves once it has been implemented. We can't forget that once the product launches from us, that it's in use. It's very much of a cycle. And we take that information and feed it back into our development process.
So I'm curious, has this increased focus on usability impacted innovation then?
So that's a good question. I think that you'll hear complaints, and certainly when a lot of the MU guidelines came out related to usability and safety enhanced design, a lot of folks are saying, well, you're going to stifle creativity. You're going to stifle innovation. I think that's wrong. I think that's absolutely wrong because it just means you're following user-centered design process is wrong. If you think about user-centered design or whatever we want to call it, human-centered design, person-centered design, there's a human, there's a person at the center of the project process. And so innovation is really required to meet those needs. And so one of the ways that we're doing this is we have a philosophy that we call a helper philosophy. We've written some things about this. It's not a secret thing, but it really is, in addition to following the rigorous user-centered design processes like we talked about before, understanding our users and collecting feedback from them and following good design guidelines and patterns, we challenge ourselves by asking the question, what would make this, whether it be a feature or module or whatever, the most helpful for a user? And it could be just a small piece, but we challenge ourselves by saying, well, what would make this most helpful? And what we find is that it's a super way for us to innovate, because we've seen that you just ask yourself the simple question, and all of a sudden now you may ask yourself, well, how do I deliver on that, right? So what is it that the user needs, right? So back to this idea of a user-centered process. So you have a user-centered design and you're putting the user at the middle of that. So what are they trying to accomplish? What are their problems and what are their goals? And so we try to take a bigger view of this and just very thinking of the EHR as a task tool, but in more thinking about how do we deliver on something that is helping the person to accomplish what they're going to do. And sometimes that means taking the activity away from the user entirely. Let the system do it. Sometimes it means the system needs to be smarter, make decisions, or provide information, or it just means we need to design it better so we're not creating burden for users. But that's one of the biggest challenges with this, is that I don't think innovation by any means is limited by a user-centered design process or a focus on usability. I think innovation is necessary to lead to those usability improvements that we want to have. Someone says, I want to spend less time working on my documenting my note. Okay, well, that's great. We can increase that through some design patterns and some good design, but how do we actually take that next step to say, well, what would make that decreased drastically? So if it takes 5 minutes now to create a note, what would it take to do that note in 1 minute? And that's where I challenge teams across the company to say, all right, challenge yourselves. What would it take to do that? And a lot of times people say, well, that would mean this, that would mean that. And we're like, great, let's do it. And so I think they go hand in hand. And actually, innovation is what is required to improve usability in this complex socio-technical system that is healthcare.
You know, that just makes a lot of sense to me. It rings true. It's like, if you're going to get to that user-centered end goal, the path you take is going to require innovation on some level.
Well, one of the things that we spend a lot of time doing is we focus, I share this with people all the time, and I say, our users don't care about features. They don't care about features. And usually people kind of go, well, what is it they care about? Because that's what they ask for. That's what we sell people, is the features of this product. And I said, well, be careful. They care about features, but only as so much that how those features help them to achieve their goals. And I think that's where innovation plays such an important part in all of this, is helping us to achieve those goals. So if a goal is for a provider says, I want to spend more face-to-face time with my patients, or they say, I want to work at the top of my license, I want to do less administrative types of activities. From a design perspective, I can make those tasks that they're doing more usable, but I've got to think more innovatively. I've got to think, well, for me to give you more face-to-face time with your patient, that means I've got to do this. Okay, well, that's an area for innovation. So as you mentioned, the focus on understanding and delivering on people's goals is really where the focus has to be as we think about how we're going to innovate and how we're actually going to improve what we're doing. We've got to be thinking about what people's highest level goals are, because if we're not meeting those, if we can't connect an innovation or a new feature or a new idea that we're rolling out, if we can't connect that to somebody's ultimate high level goal, then it's just another feature. It's just another thing in the product. It's not something that's really going to move the needle for them. And I think that's one of the big aspects that needs to be considered with all this, is how are you tying what you're delivering, what your new release is, to those high level goals that people have. That's where I think the success is going to be.
And so then I know you're working on a next generation EHR project. Mm-hmm. What can you tell our listeners about that?
So we announced our working relationship with one of our clients last year to look at a next generation EHR and trying to deliver a future EHR that is based on a foundation of new technology. And we're still progressing on that. It's been a lot of fun, actually, challenging a lot of what we've done in the past and working with some really great clinicians at the client on that. But it's great because there's been a lot of really neat ideas that people have had about how to address EHR usability and how to fix things. And those are fairly, you know, well known, right? You can just go and search for those and you can kind of see lots of articles about how to do that. But legacy technology has limited what can be done. And so what's nice about this is that we're able to focus on really what's best for the user now, because we have the Right now, the technology is not the limiting factor. So that's really exciting. And one of the other things I'll mention that our internal project name for this effort that we're working on, we're calling it Project Sherpa. Sherpa as in like a mountain guide. And it's meant to focus our efforts every day that we talk about this project on creating a product that's not just a data repository, but a helpful tool that is meant to reduce the burden, come alongside the clinicians and improve outcomes. And so, you know, that's just a fun name for us, but it kind of reminds us daily that this product needs to take on more of that role than just being, hey, I'm storing a lot of data over here. You know, let's do this. And I think that's going to be a useful way as we bring new technologies into this, as we continually think about what is it that someone wants? How are we meeting people's goals? We need to think about the EHR taking on a much more helpful and collaborative perspective than it has in the past.
So building on that, how will introducing new technologies like AI and machine learning to the HR impact usability?
Well, I joke sometimes that, can I imagine that adding technology to an EHR could be a problem? And I think, well, yeah, like we certainly could imagine what that could look like, as we've seen how what technology can do in healthcare, positively and negatively. So if it's done wrong, I think it can be a real problem. But I do think that technology can help us improve the overall usability. But here's what I remind people all the time is we can't look at technology just as something that if we throw it at the EHR, that everything will be better. We can imagine a scenario in which, for example, adding voice could actually make the EHR more burdensome for users. It could make people more frustrated. It could be done in a way that it's not conversational in the right ways. It creates an awkward environment. It could create an awkward environment for patients. It could create an awkward experience for the users. It could be a lack of trust. There could be, you just think about, you know, sometimes using your phone and asking it questions, the frustration you might have sometimes doing that. So technology can be done in a wrong way. So we have to implement it very carefully. But what I want us to think about is not just looking at the addition of technology as making up for the problems that exist. I don't want us to think that technology is like, well, great, the data is so poorly organized in an EHR that we need machine learning to fix that. Well, I'd rather fix the problems that are there and then layer on top of that the technology. That way we get the most out of it. That way we get the most from voice, or we get the most from machine learning, or whatever it might be. And I think that, again, we need to make sure that it's not just being seen as these things are hard to use, this technology will now make them easier. We're trying to fix all those problems that exist now that makes it better even without the technology, so that when we layer that technology on it, that we see even a greater value and a greater impact from that. As I said before, one of the things that we focus on so much is the focus on people's goals. Any of these technologies have to be connected directly to the people's goals that are using the product. Whatever, and a task is not a goal. A task is something that people do. Tasks are done in support of a certain goal, but we have to think about someone's goal. Someone's goal might be, I want to spend more time in the evening with my family. You know, as a UX person, as a user experience person, I think about the human side of all of this. And so one of their biggest goals is that their biggest frustrations that happen on a day-to-day basis, they may complain that something takes too long to do, or something takes too many steps or too many clicks. And they're probably right. But the reason that it's a problem for them is because it's keeping them from what else they want to do, which is get home in time to have dinner with their family while the sun is still shining. And so I think we have to think about that level of goals, and we tie any of this. So if we're going to put machine learning in a product, if we're going to talk about voice or any of these aspects, it can't just be there to make up for the bad things inside the EHR. It's got to be connected to the goals that these human beings that are using the products actually have. And so I'm excited about introducing new technology into the EHR. I think it's fantastic. I think we just have to be very careful about it, because just adding technology doesn't necessarily mean we're going to be reducing the burden.
Yeah, no, I think that makes a lot of sense. Like, not just adding technology for technology's sake, right? Keeping it human-centered, keeping the human at the center of your goals and what you're working on.
Exactly. And not just adding technology, just because of the promise of what it can do. We want to make sure it does that. We want to make sure it connects to what the human and the system needs. And we want to make sure that it's actually helping us to achieve our goals. And so I think there's a lot there. The other thing about technology I'll mention from a human factors standpoint is really that with technology and with things like things that are learning and things that are giving suggestions and advice, there's a whole world of trust that has to be understood. Confidence in that information. You know, how much time does it take to trust the recommendations or the suggestions or the black box that is, you know, artificial intelligence? How much do you have to try to cognitively figure out sort of what the algorithm was? Like, so it gave me this answer. Well, how did it get to that answer? So there's a lot of that. Like, how much of that do you make visible to someone? How much of an impact does it have on trust? So that's one of those that we can think about a task and we can think about data. But back again to the fact that there's a human part of this system, they have concerns about, well, what is it that I believe and the confidence in the information that I'm being provided. That's something that can't be overlooked either. So the technology may be fine. It may work well. But if the user doesn't trust it or they're not able to fit it into their workflow, then we're not actually solving any problems. We could be creating more burden.
I feel like that's a good place to end our conversation today. Ross, thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you. I enjoyed it.
Absolutely. And I also want to thank our podcast sponsor, Allscripts. You can tune into more podcasts from Becker's Healthcare by visiting our podcast page at beckershospitalreview.com.